Hello, everybody, and welcome to the On the Farm Pitcher List podcast about all things prospect, dynasty, and minor league related. Make sure you all subscribe to, of course, the Pitcher List podcast network. And if you do so, choose leave us a rating and review. You could always follow the On the Farm podcast at PL On the Farm on Twitter, as well as Rick at Must Be the Hawk and myself at Jake Mache. And send us any questions that you have about anything minor league baseball related, professional baseball, you know, college baseball, young kids who play baseball, whatever it is, all the stuff, we will handle it. If you're curious about anything at all, dynasty strategies, all that stuff. And we are continuing this week our mock draft, MLB mock draft series, where we're going to break down the next set of picks, the second, third, that's probably a horrible way to phrase that, but the second, third of the first round of the MLB draft, picks 11 through 20. And so we're going to be going through that. We are also going to give a bit of an update on the NCAA baseball tournament, which will be continuing today with the super regional rounds. We're going to go over what happened in the regional round, what upsets happened, how horrible my predictions may or may not have been, as well as what we can maybe expect going forward. So tons of awesome stuff, just like last week, very similar episode, but with all sorts of wonderful updates and additional information. And with that, Rick, thank you as well, as always, for showing up today, for, you know, contributing wonderful things to the podcast, and I hope you're having a wonderful week. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing really good. That was a really witty introduction. I'm still laughing at that one. That was great. I am doing good. We have been having some really warm weather in North Carolina here, so I know those listening to the podcast can't see, but I got my tank tops out. I got my Band of Horses tank top.
And your farmer's tan.
Oh, dude, it's bad, isn't it? That's yeah. That's why I'm trying to do this. So, but anyway, yeah, man, it's going well. You know, looking over college baseball stuff, writing a ton. I feel like it never ends. So, and you and I were just sitting here talking about our plans for the next couple weeks. So, we got a lot of good stuff lined up, and you know, we should be getting some more live looks in here soon. So I think probably either tomorrow or Friday, I'll be heading into Greensboro to go see the Grasshoppers high ability of the Pittsburgh Pirates and Jersey Shore. Yeah, Bergola is there for Jersey Shore right now. There's a lot of other really interesting names that are in Jersey Shore for the Phillies high A affiliate. So I should be getting some live looks there, some video footage, and we'll talk about it here on the upcoming podcasts. I don't think Winston's in town this week. They're going to be in town next week, and then they're going to be playing Greensboro. So, you know, once again, we'll just continue to talk about that. But yeah, man, besides that, great baseball stuff going on. And
absolutely.
That's it. Just trying not to look completely pasty. That's my goal this year.
There you go. Yeah, I think, you know, it's a great time for that, of course. I would also like to put in a request to the Philadelphia Phillies organization. If they happen to be listening, please take this into consideration. It would be wonderful, incredible, amazing if George Klaassen could be promoted to high A just in time for that series so you could see him throw. He's 22 years old. He has a 0.26 ERA in low A. Why is he still there? I think that's a wonderful question, a fair question to ask of you folks, wonderful people in the Philadelphia Phillies organization. Please. Yeah, that would be wonderful because, I mean, we need the live look of George Klaassen right now. So also, yeah, just to get him pitching against advanced competition because he obviously does not belong in low A. But it is what it is. We can't control them. We could only plead, please, for that to happen.
They have great pitchers in low A. With the Philadelphia organization in Clearwater, they all need to be up here at this point because they are just dominating between them and low A for the Cardinals. Like, enough's enough. Bump them up to high A.
Yeah, I don't know enough about what their high A staff looks like, but maybe we just swap just a full five for five, maybe.
I feel like that's fair.
That could be an option. But yeah, so hopefully that happens at some point or it happens later. And as long as he is close to you at some point, that would be awesome. if we could make an appeal to the higher forces. So wonderful things that are happening. And of course, we will continue putting out content throughout the summer as the MLB draft approaches, additional stuff, breaking down the results of the draft. And it's all super fun stuff. So without further ado, we will move right into the update on the NCAA tournament. It was such an awesome weekend of games. The first day had, I think, like 7 or 8 walk-offs. One reason why the NCAA baseball tournament is, it's a bold statement to say it might be superior to March Madness, because March Madness is, of course, just throttles the country for a month every year. But what I specifically love about this 60-team tournament is that all 32 teams play on day one. All 32 games happen on day one, and all 64 teams play on day one. That was amazing, and it is every year. And it's, you know, the first 2 days of March Madness are great, and there are a ton of games, and it's awesome, but there's just something different about, like, every single team in the tournament playing on the same day. And so it was, like, impossible to keep up to date with everything that was happening. I mean, you could flip back and forth between the ESPN Plus broadcasts, like, enough. Just awesome stuff. And then, I mean, obviously the competition continued. It was chaotic. There was a lot of upsets. I'll talk about that more in a little bit, but at the same time, still a lot of the teams we expected are still alive. But I mean, oh my gosh. But just to kind of go through, I'll give the matchups for the super regional round now. And then we'll kind of go through and recap some of the things we discussed last week, how they turned out, and then reassess where we're at. So first off, the first matchup is, of course, between the first overall seed, Tennessee, who very easily handled the teams in its regional. And they're facing the University of Evansville, who made it out of the Greenville regional as a 4 seed. They beat East Carolina. Wake Forest was eliminated in 2 straight games. Definitely didn't see that one coming. But then Evansville took care of VCU and East Carolina to advance. East Carolina pushed to a second game in the double elimination, the final round there. And I mean, it's awesome. I mean, they're one of, like, I can't remember the number now, but like maybe 10 teams, the 4 seed, to advance in the tournament to the Supers. So awesome performance there by Evansville. Definitely didn't see it coming. And then the next group here is Florida State is going to be hosting UConn. The Huskies made it out of the Norman Regional, where they eliminated both Duke and Oklahoma. Two very, very good teams, 2 teams that were in the conference championship the previous week. Duke was the ACC tournament champions, Oklahoma the runner-up for the Big 12. And they just breezed right through there and played really great baseball to advance. Florida State took care of the Tallahassee Regional and will be hosting that matchup. And then we have Virginia is going to be hosting Kansas State. Virginia advanced out of their own Charlottesville regional. Mississippi State was not quite as good as of competition to Virginia as we thought. Virginia kind of handled it pretty easily. And then Kansas State eliminated Arkansas. That was insane. That was really, really cool to watch. I mean, I had them pegged to go. I didn't see a situation where they would not make it out of the regional, but here we are. Kansas State, awesome team. Their offense was fantastic. And so they eliminated Arkansas and they move on. Then there is UNC hosting West Virginia. West Virginia made it out of the Tucson regional, eliminating Arizona and Dallas Baptist. And then UNC made it out of their own regional, where they defeated LSU to move on. And then to the other side of the bracket now, those 4 matchups, the winner of each of those will move on to one part of the one half of the College World Series to face each other. And then the other side of the bracket here, the number two seed nationally, Kentucky, is going to host Oregon State. The both teams were hosted in their regionals. This is the first of the five matchups I've talked about now where both favorites, both host teams made it through and out of the regional. They're both very good teams. It's going to be an awesome matchup. Oregon State is super, super dangerous. And then moving on, another two teams who were the hosts to move out of their regional into the Super. Georgia, number 7, is hosting NC State, number 10. And then going on to Clemson, who is hosting Florida, who Florida advanced out of the Stillwater Regional, where they eliminated Nebraska and Oklahoma State. And then the final matchup in the Super Regionals is Texas A&M, the number 3 national seed, hosting Oregon, who made it out of the Santa Barbara Regional, eliminating San Diego and UCSB. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of just the matchups that we're going to see this weekend. The right side of the bracket, as I am looking at it on the screen, is if you would see it as well if you look at the official bracket, that doesn't have Tennessee, is like very, very competitive, very, very wide open. Lots of ranked teams still alive. And then the other side of the bracket, which I thought wouldn't be as chaotic, is the chaos bracket where you have a lot of unranked teams. And what was super cool about this, so I saw a statistic at the beginning of the tournament that said that 67% of teams have advanced out of teams that have hosted a regional, have advanced out of the regional since this format was established. And there was a ton of upsets. So, I mean, out of the 16 regionals, I have to do some quick math real quick. Six of the 16 were unranked, were not hosts. So that is like, for chaos, you know, I absolutely love that. Just really cool, really cool so far. So we'll see if that continues. You know, we'll see if these teams that have made really great runs so far can continue the momentum. And then just to recap now, what we were talking about last week, what I had surmised might possibly happen. As I was watching it, it felt a lot more unexpected, but as I went back and looked at it, I was like, okay, not that bad. Not horrible. So I said that the Tucson and Stillwater and Clemson regionals would be like the most interesting. The Clemson regional was pretty boring. Clemson just kind of beat everybody. It was a little interesting, like Coastal Carolina and Vanderbilt were both good and played well, but in the end, Clemson was just too good. The Tucson and Stillwater regionals, however, chaos. Awesome. Like, I mean, those were so much fun. The Tucson one specifically, Arizona, the one seed in the regional, the national 13 seed, I believe, if I'm doing the math right, they lost in 2 straight games and were eliminated immediately. Grand Canyon, beat Arizona, and then they beat, they lost to West Virginia, and then Grand Canyon eliminated Dallas Baptist. So the one seed was eliminated by the 4, and the 2 was eliminated by the, or the 1 was eliminated by the 3, and then the 2 was eliminated by the 4. So awesome stuff happening there. And then Grand Canyon then lost to West Virginia in the regional final. So really awesome stuff there. Grand Canyon looked legit. I would like, they easily could have made it out of the bracket. So that was really cool. And then Stillwater, I loved Oklahoma State. I talked them up really highly. I thought they were going to go all the way and win. That was my pick, and they lost in their hosted regional. But I did point out that it was a very competitive regional and that it would be a little chaotic. I don't know why I didn't connect the dots there, but that is what it is. Nebraska played all right, but it was Florida that really took the regional by storm. I mean, they were just ridiculous. I mean, they have, you know, obviously a high draft pick and Jack Haleanona performed really well. And so just, again, really good regional, really great competition. Just Oklahoma State even lost consecutive, like they were in the winner's bracket all the way until the final, then lost consecutive games against Florida. So, I mean, Florida absolutely deserved it. I mean, that was a ridiculous performance at the end, holding Oklahoma State to 4 runs in those final 2 games when they had scored 26 in their previous 2 games. So Oh my gosh. I love baseball. It's so chaotic. So yeah, so that is, I mean, Rick, am I right or am I right? You know,
you're right. I actually got a sticker on my laptop right over here, for, what is it? The radio voice of the Yankees. He just recently, was it, Sterling, I think.
Yes. John Sterling.
Yeah. That's baseball, Susan.
Yeah.
I got a sticker that literally says that. It's fantastic, but it's so true though. That's baseball for you. We end up thinking that these teams are just going to completely powerhouse their way through and chaos ensues. And man, you know, I'm living for the chaos, man. This has been pretty darn interesting. It was sad to see Wake fall, ECU, same thing. I thought that those guys were going to do a little bit more than what they did. But all in all, I think it's, you know, a very solid bracket. I think I'm going to be really interesting to watch the NC State and Georgia game. I think that'll be interesting. UNC and West Virginia should be a fun matchup. UNC is a very talented group of players. It amazed me that Duke fell.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That really surprised me. And from watching Clemson play this year, anything can happen. You know, I think Clemson could be knocked out, you know, depending on what happens with the Florida series. So just crazy, man. College baseball for you.
Yeah. I mean, you're a fool if you go on a podcast and try to give any sort of predictions as to what might happen.
That's why I stayed quiet.
Right. You're like nodding your head, like, good luck, buddy. Oh my God. But
I was with you with Stenson though. I thought Stenson.
Yeah,
was Stenson.
Yeah. I thought, you know, and they I watched the game. So it was, of course, the first group of games that that started the whole tournament. And Stetson on the second pitch of the game gave up a solo shot. And I was like, vibes aren't good. Aren't good. And they ended up – they won a game. They won the game after they lost to Florida State in the opening game. They then turned around and beat Alabama. So, like
– that's a good team.
That's an accomplishment. That's a good team. But then they went on to fall against UCF. Played tightly. I will blame the weather delay, maybe, sure. Even though they happened all over the country. I guess I'll do that. Yeah, sure. And then Florida State, of course, just, you know, demolished UCF in the regional final. So, I mean, Stetson, in the end of the day, kind of funny. They were 5-6 against tournament teams. They ended up going 1-2 against tournament teams in the tournament. So not exactly away from what they had done previously. But, you know, I think that they could have won a couple more, and they played tough. They didn't get like blown out at all. So overall, Stetson, I appreciate it for the rooting interest, but ultimately their efforts were not enough. But I did talk about West Virginia potentially coming out of their regional. They did, as well as Oregon. They pulled off the upset as well. Texas stunk. They didn't put up much of a fight. And then Florida also advanced. So a couple, you know, three seeds, I think, that I had mentioned were going to be pretty good, ended up advancing. So that's, you know, that's something. But then I was quickly humbled when two of my three national championship contenders that I mentioned were eliminated in the first round in Arkansas and, of course, Oklahoma State. Tennessee advanced, but of course Tennessee advanced because they're the number one overall seed and the best team in the country. So congrats, Jake. You predicted the most likely outcome and it worked. So now I am looking at the bracket and I don't see how Tennessee doesn't not only win the super regional and then go on to come out of the first bracket in the College World Series and then advance to the College World Series final series. Because I mean, so much great competition was taken out on that side of the bracket this weekend in Oklahoma and Duke and Arkansas and Arizona and Mississippi State and LSU. Like, there's so many contending teams there. And the ones that are left, the unranked teams, it is possible that one of them would just continue an insane run and knock off Tennessee at some point. Obviously, insanely unlikely. And then as far as the ranked teams that are left, Florida State, Virginia, and UNC. UNC is very good. They are ranked fourth nationally, so like very possible, but I just Tennessee is so good. I don't see how you could really bet against that at this point. No. So seems to me like a lock, pending a jinx, that they would appear in the final. And then looking at that other side of the bracket, I have no idea. I'm not even going to try, like, Oklahoma State, but I mean, like, Kentucky, Oregon State, who's the 15th national seed, who I think should be higher. They are so good. They have Bazana. They have an incredible staff. So, like, they're fantastic. Georgia and NC State, Florida and Clemson. Florida, who is playing like a nationally ranked team, like a team that definitely could have hosted, a team that started the year ranked top 10 nationally. And then you have Texas A&M, who's just been ridiculous as well, third ranked team nationally, and Oregon. I think Oregon is the only team that is not a true, like, national title contender. Like, everyone else is really, really good there. So that's going to be an incredible thing to watch, just how that bracket shapes out. And I think if I had to give a bold prediction, I would say Oregon State beats Kentucky and then finishes like runner up in the College World Series. Really, really like their team, and I think that they were underseeded. Other than that, I don't know if I could pick a horse. I would root for Georgia over Texas A&M, and then that's about it. Rick, do you have any thoughts on the rest of the bracket, how it looks with the Supers and the eventual College World Series?
No, I mean, I'm with you. I think Tennessee has got as good of a path to the World Series as much as possible to be that top team. Now it's just up to them. They just got to play good baseball. All right. Yep. When it comes to, you know, Georgia, Texas A&M, I'd like to see Texas A&M do a little bit of rolling here. I think that'd be nice.
Okay.
That'd be nice. I'd like to see Brady Montgomery get some more love before the draft and continue to boost up his stock. Mm-hmm. So that way, you know, in the next segment that we do, that I would have been completely wrong last week. You know, maybe, yeah, exactly. maybe the Athletics take him over Jack Caglione.
Maybe
with mm-hmm. a strong showing. You don't know. Yeah. But Jack's still there. So if Jack continues to crush the ball, who knows?
Right, exactly. And that's the thing, like with Florida and Clemson playing a 3-game series, like mm-hmm. if Caglione can pitch in the first game, you know, keep him close. Like, I know he hasn't been an incredible pitcher, but like if he could impact that first game, if they can take that first game, like mm-hmm. I really think that they definitely have a shot to beat Clemson, and they're you know, I don't think they should be considered like the full underdog, even though they were a 3 seed in their regional. Like, that's gonna be a really good series.
Yeah, no, not at all. I think, honestly, that's probably the right way to go. If Clemson's going to be knocked out, it could be by Florida. And, you know, we saw this with Ty Floyd last year with LSU, where he had decent numbers, but there was still a lot to be desired from him. Mm-hmm. And he goes out there, and I think he had that, like, what, was it 13 or 15 strikeout game last year in one of the tournament games. So
yeah, I mean, that really elevated his status leading into the draft for sure.
Big time. So, mm-hmm. you know, we're doing this mock draft, but there is still a lot of room for some of these guys to just blow the ceiling out. You know, JJ Weatherholt, you know, with West Virginia is still in it. You know, there's a lot of these guys that are still in it. Travis Bazana is still with, you know, doing what he's doing. I don't know. I'm very interested, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, yes, the next time that we record an episode, we'll be preparing for the College World Series that will be starting a week from today. And so we'll absolutely kind of break down what happened over the weekend and what we could see in the College World Series. I am sure it will look nothing like we expect it, per usual, but regardless, it'll be a ton of fun. So if you weren't able to catch any of the craziness last week, tune in this week and check it all out, and then we will break it down later on. But before we move on, we're going to go to a quick ad break here. So stick with us for after the ad break, when we will come back and discuss, recap the first 10 picks of our mock draft, and then continue to discuss the next 10 picks of our 2024 MLB mock draft. All right, and we are back, and we are ready to dive into the second portion of our OTF official MLB mock draft. We went through picks 1 through 10 last week, so if you didn't catch our episode last week, feel free to go back and listen to those picks that we gave to kind of be a bit more, I guess, you know, aware, prepared, knowledgeable about what we have already talked about, those 10 players. But I'll go through them here now to just recap where we are at currently. That way everyone remembers kind of who is still available and who has already been taken in our mock draft. So first overall, the Guardians, we have them selecting Charlie Condon, the multi-eligible, the infielder, the outfielder for Georgia, who just broke the home run record. Second overall to the Reds, we have Chase Burns, the right-hander out of Wake Forest. Third overall to the Rockies, we have Hagen Smith, the left-handed pitcher from Arkansas. Fourth to the Athletics, we have Jack Caglione from Florida, the first baseman and left-handed pitcher. And then fifth to the White Sox is Braden Montgomery, outfielder from Texas A&M. Sixth is the Royals that would pick Travis Bazzana, the second baseman from Oregon State. Seventh, we have the Cardinals selecting Nick Kurtz, the first baseman for Wake Forest. And then eighth, the Angels taking J.J. Weatherholt, the middle infielder from West Virginia. And then at nine, we have Vance Honeycutt, the outfielder from North Carolina. And then rounding out the top 10, the Nationals, as the OTF mock draft states, they would take Trey Yesavage, right-handed pitcher from East Carolina, who outdueled Chase Burns when they matched up in an elimination game on the second day of the tournament over the weekend. Mm. That was a ridiculous game. That was so fun to watch them pitch against each other. Yesavage, of course, had home field advantage with East Carolina, the fans pumping him up. And he gave up, I think he had one hit. I know he had allowed one hit through six innings. That I can't remember if he ended with just one hit allowed. But, I mean, he was just nasty. It was just a couple walks that came in and got him in the end. But, whew, man, he looked good.
See, so this is a really interesting draft class for pitching.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like you said, you're seeing one of the best, you know, college pitchers going up with Chase Burns and going against Yesavage, who we're projecting at number 10 right now. Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty awesome, man, to be able to see that matchup. I would have liked to see Ryan Johnson pitch for Dallas Baptist, but I didn't get the chance this week.
Very fair. Yeah. I love that Evanston pulled off the upset. Very happy for them. Really, really cool. But man, it would have been so much fun to watch Yesavage against Tennessee. Like, you know, again, very happy for them. Congrats, Evansville. I think I said Evanston, didn't I?
Yeah.
Evansville. I'm from Indiana, so I guess that gives me a pass to mess up them. So anyway, moving on to the 11th overall selection, the next portion of our mock draft, which has not yet been revealed. The Tigers would be on the clock for the 11th overall pick. And as you might have noticed, all of the first 10 picks were college players. So Rick, are the Tigers going to be that team to buck the trend, to take the value, the maybe underslot value in that high schooler that is available? Or do you think that they will continue taking the college players?
So I think that they will go high school here and go underslot. They did last year with Max Clark early on in the draft, and I think that they'll continue that trend here. Whenever I was looking at their farm system to this point, as well as what they have in the major league side, you could make the argument that Connor Griffin is a perfect fit for the Tigers here. He could play shortstop. He could go to the outfield. He could do either one. And those are both needs that the Tigers need long term. So whenever it comes to Connor Griffin, he, once again, could stick out shortstop or outfield. Both options make sense for the Tigers long term. Baez has his contract through 2027, the 2027 season. So this would make logical sense for Griffin to be able to have a couple of years lead up towards making his, you know, debut, if you're going to look at it from that lens. And with how much the Tigers are paying him, you know, that just makes sense to me. He had Baez had an opt out in 23, but, you know, he played so darn good, he's just wanting to stay there. So Tigers are going to eat that one. Realistically speaking, I think that he has the skills to stay at shortstop. there is big power here. And if you put him alongside Riley Green and Max Clark in the outfield, that would be fantastic as well.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Right. So, but you know, there's power and speed here. You know, there's potential 30 home run power, 30 stolen base, you know, so from shortstop, you're looking at like a Francisco Lindor type of shortstop in terms of, you know, 30-30 potential, right? And in the outfield, I mean, you'll take 30-30 in the outfield all day long. So, and with the height on him, he's 6'4", 215 pounds. So, you know, this is a corner outfield bat if you're going to put him out that way. Connor Griffin, to me, makes sense. It kind of fits the timeline in which the Tigers are kind of looking at right here. They have their wave of youth coming through right at the moment. They still have some guys in the minor leagues. Justin Henry Molloy is making his debut this week. So, you know, I looked at that. I looked at the possibility of potentially getting more arms, but they still have a lot of arms in their system that has not cracked the majors to this point. So I think that this would be a smart call for them here at 11.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the value would definitely be great. I mean, just the upside in this kind of polished high school hitter is just really good for whoever grabs him. But really, like you said, matches up very well with the Tigers organization, and I think would definitely be a fun one. What will be really interesting in FYPDs, like let's say even if Connor Griffin goes like top five in the MLB draft, I think regardless we'll probably see Connor Griffin drop much farther than maybe he should be, maybe he would in other years in like dynasty offseason drafts, just because of the fact is like he is the one that is farther away, you know. When there is so much college talent like we have, even if it isn't like there is definitely some really great college talent, it's definitely I think not quite as highly regarded as maybe like last year's top end talent, but it is very deep, and so it'll be really interesting to see how, you know, everyone's fantasy teams, fantasy managers then approach the offseason drafts, because you have a couple high schoolers who are going to be very good, and then you have all these college players. So it's possible that we could see some really, really good eventual major leaguers be taken later than maybe they would otherwise, just because of the fact that there's so much like immediate help or close to immediate help that is also exists in the draft.
I think that's a good point, man, because you think back to 2019. That was the draft year of Anthony Volpe. You know, there was a lot of other high school talent that ended up being taken and being able to go from there. So, you know, I think that that's actually a pretty solid call, that it would not surprise me if we get to a certain point and you're seeing a lot of MLB-ready talent come from the high school ranks of this draft, but they're just being buried beneath the amount of college talent that's here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So that will definitely be something to monitor as we go along, especially in the offseason after the draft and everything like that. But moving on to the 12th overall selection, the Red Sox will be on the clock here. And now I think, you know, you got the primary high school player off the board. Ton of college players have been off the board as well in top 10. Feels like there's a few different ways they could go. But Rick, how do you see the pick playing out?
All right. So I made a mention of this. It was kind of difficult to be able to figure out which way the Red Sox would go with this. If you look at what they did last year, they took Kyle Teal to shore up their catcher spot long term and move up quickly throughout their organization, which to this point he has done with very, you know, very nice success to this point. In previous seasons, they did go high school talent. You know, Marcelo Mayer is one that comes to mind right off the bat, you know, but he's moving, you know, I think he's up in double A right now currently. So that's another wave that's soon to be getting to Boston and filling out that team right now. So if I'm them and looking at their farm system too, they don't have a ton of pitching prospects. So for me, it made a little bit more sense to go college arm and shore up that rotation, because they have a decent rotation right now, but they don't have a lot of, you know, high end arms coming up through the system. I think Wilkman Gonzalez, I think, is one that is coming up that I saw on there, but that's still not quite the caliber that you're wanting to go with here.
Right. Yeah. I think, like, especially with the, like, overhaul that they did to their pitching development, they brought on, oh my gosh, why am I blanking on his name now? The founder of Driveline, Kyle. Bodie. And so they brought him in. They hired a new, like, pitching coordinator, pitching coach. Like, they just really revamped everything. And it's we've seen some pretty good results. I mean, their major league pitching staff has been insane this year. I mean, I don't think it would be that quick of a turnaround because they just did this in the offseason. It might be, you know, lining up pretty well there. But, like, I think giving them a new, their first big shiny toy, you know, that they can then develop and mold and work with, I think is a really good option for them. Because I mean, like, I would love to see how that new group kind of approaches developing Ryan Johnson. I think that would be a ton of fun as a just baseball fan and, you know, podcast person about the minor leagues to continue to, you know, evaluate as it happens. So that'd be really cool for sure.
Yeah. So, yeah. That would be definitely my call, would be going with the Dallas Baptist ace. Ryan Johnson would be my call. And you guys have heard me talk about him multiple times on this podcast. I've written about him a ton. I think that there's a lot of upside to be had here. In 16 games pitched this season, Johnson struck out 151 batters over 106 innings pitched. That's good for a 12.8 K per nine with a extremely solid, especially for college ranks, 1.2 walks per nine. That goes with his 2.21 ERA, and that's all in Conference USA. You know, obviously not one of the major, major conferences, but still a very solid conference in its own right. So I really like that. He features a solid five-pitch mix, a fastball, curveball, slider, cutter, and changeup. Thrown with pinpoint accuracy, man. This is, to me, this is a lot of what we saw with Nick Lodolo whenever he came out of TCU all those years ago in 2019, I believe, is when he was drafted. So I see a lot of that here. Johnson finished the year ranked third in strikeout to walk ratio in all of NCAA with a 10.79 strikeout to walks. Crazy. As well as in total strikeouts with 151 behind just Chase Burns and Hagen Smith. So great company right there. And honestly, to be available at 12th overall to the Red Sox, I think personally is a steal. I know in a lot of these like mock drafts and, you know, prospect rankings and everything, they have him like down 30th overall, somewhere in that range, or, you know, second round. I think Ryan Johnson goes in the first. This is a pitcher that I think can easily be plugged into a team that feels like they're about to turn a corner and get this talent up to the major leagues. And for me, the Red Sox is a great fit for him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's with the results, with his pitch mix, with his just abilities, like, obviously the college pitchers that have already been taken, you know, the big ones and like Burns and Smith and Yesavage, like they're obviously a tier above him, a step above him, but it's not as huge of a gap, like you said, as it may seem. And he can be like just as, you know, quickly moving and potentially impactful as at least a few of those guys. So I think, yeah, exactly. It would be a great steal. And it's potentially, you know, just a case of playing for Dallas Baptist, you know, in Conference USA. He's not facing the SEC. He's not, you know, facing like the top end of talent. It's, you know, a much easier schedule. And so maybe there might be some hesitancy there. But in general, I think teams know a lot more about just the, like the, I don't want to say the analytics as a blanket term, but you know, the mix that these guys carry, the skills that they have, you know, there's a lot more knowledge, I think, deeper around these players. And so to your point, I think that it's definitely possible that somebody who maybe in the past might've been buried because of where he plays and the competition he faces can definitely be pumped up for an organization that goes under the hood a little bit and sees how great he could be. So that'll be really interesting to monitor to see where he goes, because he's super, super talented. And then 13th overall, moving on here to the Giants, who will have that pick. Giants have been one of the oldest teams in baseball the last few years now. Their farm system is not incredibly deep. They don't have like a, you know, pending superstar that might come up really. And the guys that have been debuted in the last 2 years or so haven't really like hit the ground sprinting, you know, or even jogging. And so it'll be really interesting to see the direction they go as they continue to kind of rebuild the organization, the farm system. They've been a really fascinating team recently, the moves that they make in all levels. So, Rick, good luck in predicting this one. But where do you see them going with this 13th overall pick?
I know I say that with like every single one of these, but like the Giants are very difficult.
Yeah.
To like be able to figure out what they're going to do, because like you said, like their minor league system has got some upside, but it's not quite what we would have thought it would be at this point. And whenever you look at their major league side, their team is just very interesting. What I ended up saying here is the organization needs pitching quickly. And also, understandably speaking, Marco Luciano has been kind of questionable at shortstop. So this could be a good opportunity for Bryce Rainer. But as a high school player, it'd be several years before he's ready to go. And this leads me to believe that they're going to want to try to bolster their outfield with this draft. And that's why I'm going to go James Tibbs here for Florida State. I think Tibbs in general, with the Giants aside, is a very, very interesting prospect in this draft. I think that he is very underrated and will potentially slide a little bit as a result of it. But he's been extremely solid at Florida State, and I think that there is a lot of upside to be had here. He's one of the, you know, advanced college bats who can move very quickly. He fits the mold as a long-term option for the Giants. In 60 games played with Florida State this season, Tibbs slashed 361, 486, 781 with 25 home runs, 67 runs scored, 84 RBIs, 6 stolen bases. You know, this is a guy that I think could be able to bat in the middle of that order, drive in runs, you know, be able to provide that, you know, 25 to 30 home run pop. Obviously, that park is a home run suppressing park, so it's going to be hard for him to be able to hit for you know, big power there. But if you look at what he's been able to do in his three seasons at Florida State, Tibbs did not bat below 300 or have an OBP below 411 while increasing his power year over year with 10 home runs in 22, 17 in 23, and now, like I said, 25 here in 24. I do believe that there is a 30 home run bat here potentially. And if he's able to bat 280 to 300, you know, moving up through the minor leagues, I think the Giants could build upon this and have a very solid option here. While I'm writing this, like, I kept trying to not tell myself that this is like a very similar Michael Conforto mold. But I was having a very hard time convincing myself that he's not. I just think that the bat will be better with average and OBP, but very similar in a lot of respects.
Yeah, absolutely. Comping players is always such an interesting process. But Michael Conforto is a very good MLB player when he's healthy and producing. And I think that there's definitely a room for the Giants will take whatever they can get. And Tibbs is definitely he's produced for sure and will be an interesting pick there. So I love that for the Giants to get some talent who will be able to produce sooner rather than later, potentially, if he continues to develop as he has been. And then moving on to the Cubs, who is had a very, very rough month of May as an MLB team, but their organization as a whole looks very good. And they have a lot of depth and a lot of options. And so 14th overall, the draft really gets wide open as we approach the middle part of the draft here of the first round. And then continuing, it'll be harder and harder to predict, of course, after the top, you know, period of names here. So, Rick, where do you think the Cubs might go with that 14th overall pick?
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying, Jake. Hats off to the Cubs. They really have a solid MLB team, you know, with very little holes long-term and a stacked farm system. Now, I understand Cubs fans might not agree with some parts of how they performed this year, but if you look on paper, they do have a very solid team, very young, and, you know, trying to, you know, solidify that long-term. So it makes it a little bit more difficult, but what I determined from this is I believe that a high school arm is the right decision for them long term. So I'm going with William Schmidt here. He's a right-handed pitcher out of high school. And you know, I really liked what I saw here. William Schmidt is considered to be the best prep arm in this draft, and rightfully so. He has a four-seam fastball that sits 96 miles per hour. Tops out at 99 so far in showcases this year. It's paired with a high spin rate curveball coming in at 82 miles per hour. And is one of his best offerings, getting a ton of swing and misses. And I kind of put in parentheses here for Jake, but I'm going to tell you guys as well. The profile sounds very, very familiar to Ben Brown.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, Ben Brown throws a knuckle curve, so it's different, but you know, fastball and curveball, you know, mix up right there is pretty good. Lastly, mm-hmm. Schmidt throws or mixes in a 83 mile an hour changeup with solid sink to it. Really has a potential to be able to have at least three above average pitches with the curveball and fastball, you know, already plus offerings to this point. So, and that curveball could be even better than that. Standing at 6'4", 180 pounds on the right side, Schmidt could be a solid option when Jameson Taillon, Imanaga potentially move on after the 27-28 seasons, respectively. Taillon is under contract through 27. Imanaga has a player option for 28. So, you know, that could be very interesting. And, you know, I think a lot of dynasty managers don't like looking out that far and trying to project, but I think especially whenever you're drafting a high school talent like this, Bobby Witt is an anomaly. You know, Riley Green Absolutely. Is also an anomaly. These Right. guys don't typically fly through the system like that and have success in the major leagues. And Riley Green has taken some time to get established, right? But Bobby Witt, I mean, he's just been Bobby Witt. Really, realistically speaking, I think we're going to be lucky to see William Schmidt, no matter what organization that he's in, pitch maybe three or four starts after the draft. And I've been seeing more so than not a lot of these teams holding back high school arms to start the following year. So this is projecting him to start in 2025. Okay, if he jumps two levels in 25 and two levels in 26, that's going to put him on target to try to make his debut at 27. And even then, that could be really quick, depending on how he does things, right? Not to mention if, God forbid, he needs Tommy John surgery, whatever the case might be, he loses a year of development. This is, in my opinion, a great way for the Cubs to be able to bolster that rotation going forward. You know, and just build that way. They have solid talent that's coming on the infield. They've done a lot of really great drafts here recently that have got them set up to it. They got a lot of talent going to the outfield with Owen Casey. So go high school arm, and I think you'll find success.
Yeah, I really like that point you make there about the Cubs. I think they have the luxury of choosing someone that will not be ready for a while. Because, you know, I think college, even, you know, college players do every once in a while, even the top ones just take longer to development is not linear, of course, and doesn't work the same for everybody. Even with the amount of college players we've seen recently that move super quickly through, it's still unpredictable. But in general, you'd think, you know, with college players who are older, they are available quicker. The Cubs, they could just pick the best player available. I don't think they really have to worry too much about, like, oh, like, how quickly is this guy gonna come in? Are they gonna fill a hole? I mean, I think William Schmidt, they could take him, they could develop him, they could take their time, and, you know, they'll use him when he comes up and when he's ready. But yeah, they're not like the Angels, you know, who are going to say, we need to bolster this rotation right now to not waste Mike Trout, so we're taking a bunch of college players and we're pushing them up as soon as possible. That's definitely not where they need to be or should be. So love the fact that they would take the best high school pitcher who isn't going to be ready for a while, but will be a fantastic talent and potentially an incredible value at where they're at in the draft for sure.
Last point here, and to move further upon what you're saying here, Cade Horton is almost ready to go. Mm-hmm. You know, he's going to be the next guy up. And realistically speaking, you got Steele there right now. Assad has been pitching relatively well for them, you know, and I'm blanking now on their fifth starter, completely escaping me, and I apologize. But, you know, it would make sense that Cade Horton is the next guy up. He'd be able to get in there, establish himself. By the time these two older pitchers move on, you know, that would make sense. So that was my mode of thinking through here.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, I'm not too sure if you did forget a pitcher for the Cubs, because you had mentioned Tyone and Amanaga and Brown, Assad, and Steele. Didn't you just say Brown, Assad, and Steele?
Yeah, I left Brown off of that. That's the one I was looking at there.
That was the one. Okay.
Yeah, so realistically speaking, you know, Assad could be replaced, you know, at some point here, but I think this is the way to go.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So then moving on to the 15th overall selection, which is held by the Seattle Mariners. Where do you see them going with this selection? The Mariners have been absolutely killing the recent draft. So I'm looking forward just to whoever they pick is going to have an asterisk next to them. And it's something to keep an eye on for sure moving forward, because they've been hitting homers back to back to back in these first rounds of the draft. So where do you see them going, Rick?
Yeah. And my first reaction, I did not go with this, but my first reaction was, oh, this is perfect. Bryce Rainer. They keep taking shortstops first round, right? Cole Emerson, and then what was the one previous to that?
Cole Young.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, yeah, why not, right? But the more I thought about it, I'm like, it's not likely, right? You're not going to load up on three of them here. And then you start looking at what they have in their minor league system, and their minor league system is just so stacked with talent. You know, they have their major league arms that are up there ready to go. They have a lot of infield talent. They got some outfield talent that's coming as well. So I was like, you know what, Mariners, it makes sense to go high school arm here. And I ended up going with Caminiti, I think is how you pronounce it. The left-handed pitcher out of high school. So let's see. So he fits the mold. He's a hard-throwing left-hander with upside. Could improve a system like Seattle. Standing at 6'2", 195 pounds. From the left side, he features a mid-90s fastball, reaches 98, paired with a solid curveball, slider, and changeup that project as above-average 2+ offerings long-term. To me, this could be a pitcher that has, you know, posted plus spin rates. This is something that the Mariners do very, very well with, as well as working with their control. So I think if he was able to fall to 15th overall here, I think that would be a really good value for the Mariners long term. And if they're able to get a little bit more out of him, pretty solid. And we've seen them also move some high school arms like this in the past for deals that help their major league squad. So either way, solid call.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Trader Jerry will continue to be active for sure. But left-handed high school pitching prospect that reaches 98 miles per hour. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Even if it blows up, crashes and burns, it will be really fun to watch. Yes. So love that. And then before moving on to the next picks, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back, and then we're going to go through 16th overall through 20th overall, the Marlins, Brewers, Rays, Mets, and Blue Jays, and then that'll be the rest of the episode. So stick with us to round out the rest of the top 20 in our 2024 MLB mock draft. All right, we are back and ready to round out the top 20 in our 2024 MLB mock draft. 16th overall pick is held by the Miami Marlins, who have been their own unique kind of dumpster fire in the both in and after the Derek Jeter era, except for when Kim Ng was in charge. That actually went wonderfully, but we are now past her as well, and it's back to being a dumpster fire. So what on earth might they possibly do to start to reverse course and be good again, Rick?
This might be far for Bryce Rainer to fall in the draft, but I believe that this could be an amazing landing spot for the young shortstop with an organization that really needs a long-term player at short. So Bryce Rainer is who I'm going with here, a shortstop, long-term. But this is a guy who has some major upside, I believe. He stands at 6'3", 195 pounds, batting from the left side of the plate. Rainer could move off of short as he continues to add muscle and add to his raw power. But personally, I think he stays there long term and could be a dynasty dynamo as he makes his way up the Marlins organization. And it's not out of the realm of possibilities to see comparisons to Anthony Volpe long term here. I promise you guys, I do not like throwing comparisons out there a lot. I do throw some to Jake because I just think it's funny, you know, but
agreed.
I watched Anthony Volpe come up through the system and come through Greensboro with Hudson Valley. He reminds me so much of him, but he's got a bigger body build than Anthony Volpe. I think there's more power to be had there. And Volpe had some very surprising pop to begin with. But this is a guy that went 20-20 last year with the Yankees, yes, with a bad batting average, but he's making up for it this year. Yeah. You're starting to see him come around in a big way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bryce Rainer is a guy that I believe they thought they were getting in Jazz Chisholm at short. I think that he will be able to lock down that position long term. And if you look in their farm system, Yidi Capé is the only one that's got shortstop experience right there right now that is of higher caliber. So with the Marlins, I thought about, like, do you go college here and try to get him up as quick as possible? I don't believe so. I believe, just like you said, this is a dumpster fire. Embrace it. You have a lot of really talented pitching prospects in your organization, young pitching prospects in your organization, and you've gone high school over the last several years. Continue to do that. Be the Yankees of the early 1990s, where you draft Jeter, you draft Pettit, you draft all these guys, and build like that.
Sure.
I think that's the way to go, and I think there's slim chance that Rainer falls to 16, but if he does, man, this could be huge for the Marlins long term.
No, absolutely, for sure. Also, I would love to know why we haven't heard of someone referred to as a dynasty dynamo yet, because it seems like you've been keeping something incredible from us, Rick. And in the same vein, I'm just curious, why Bryce Rainer? Why does he get that that tag, that incredible little description as a dynasty dynamo? Like, what made you say that about him? Because love it. But yeah, please explain yourself.
Well, I have a team where I was very privileged to have not only Bobby Witt come up through my system, but I also had Anthony Volpe. So I have this, like, embarrassment
of riches.
Of riches in which exactly right. Where I have to play Volpe as a utility player, which I know everybody who's in my league and is maybe off the off chance listening to this is like, oh, wow, I'll bet you cry some more. But, like, it's one of those that, like, you build a dynasty team around.
Yeah.
You know, you build around what Volpe's doing this year. You build, obviously, around what Witt's doing. You know, I've built so many teams around, you know, Francisco Lindor whenever he was coming up. I find when you build something around a shortstop that's, like, locked in long term, that is, like, a major cornerstone to your entire team. If you can bolster down your bats to a point that you can run these guys out there and not worry about what they're going to do. That is so powerful to me. So I look at him and I'm like, I like what I see. And I think that this could be something that could be very interesting if he's in the right organization that develops that talent right. I'm not saying Miami is necessarily that. No offense, Miami. But I didn't think that Bobby Witt being in Kansas City was a great call either.
Sure.
I think there's a certain level that prospects in general succeed on their natural abilities, and then they succeed off of organizational adding on top of that.
Yep.
And I still believe that Bobby Witt's just that naturally talented.
Right. It's hard to mess it up. No. Yeah. Like, the Nationals were never going to mess up Juan Soto or Bryce Harper. They just were going to be what they were going to be.
Right. Or CJ Abrams right now, too. That's a great. Yeah. See, once again, a cornerstone.
Mm-hmm. So, all right. Love it. Love the pick there. Moving on to 17th overall. I absolutely love this pick. I am a homer, but the Brewers are up at 17th overall. And Rick, who's it going to be?
I put this one in there for you because I think that it checks all the boxes around. Though I will say I was hoping he was going to fall two more picks to my Mets. Brody Brett. I think that he is going to be a great pick for the Brewers. We saw, and you saw in particularly, what he did in Iowa.
Yeah.
And it was filthy, but he needs somebody to kind of hone his skills and his command and control, right? That was one of the major keys here.
If the strike zone was twice as big as it is, he would actually be fantastic.
Right.
Be the best.
It could be. Could be very similar to. I'm not throwing more comments. Yeah, I'm done. I'm done because I'm gonna get so much hate mail for what I got so far. like I said, massive upside here if the organization can work on his command and control. The Brewers could be that organization long term to be able to go for maximizing his potential. Brett stands at 6'4", 235 pounds, features an electric combination in his 96 to 99 mile per hour fastball that has reached 101, paired with an 87 to 89 mile per hour slider with excellent horizontal and vertical action to it. The splitter is a pitch that he doesn't throw as often, but he does substitute it for the changeup, and it's pretty darn good in its own right. It just needs some more development. He got away with literally being a fastball slider pitcher there in Iowa, and you don't mess with what works, right? And for them, keep doing what you're doing. So, in his 15 appearances this season, Brett had 128 strikeouts over 78 and a third innings pitch. That's good for a 14.7 K per nine. You guys have been listening to this podcast with all of the college numbers here recently. 14.7 is ridiculous. That is really, really high. Okay. But struggles with the walks mightily, 5.6 walks per nine. But he did finish the year with a 3.33 ERA. There's definitely reliever risk here, guys. I'm not going to front. There is definitely reliever risk, but a part of me really wanted the Mets to get him and put him through that pitching factory that they have, or pitching lab is what they like to call it, where I think that they could be able to develop more. But if there's a team, if there's two teams that I would like him to go to besides the Mets, it would be either the Brewers or the Rays. And the Brewers grabbing here at 17th overall looks like a great deal for me and any dynasty manager that takes him, as they're already working on the command and control of Jacob Mizorowski. They want the Ks. And I think Brody Brett could be a guy that could be a major dynasty asset long term.
Yes, love the sound of that, and definitely agree. I think we mentioned it in our previous episode of the podcast, but this is a fantastic range for pitching development, for pitchers to go, for an arm like Brody Brett to go. I mean, pretty much guaranteed, like really any team that takes him around here. The Mariners, well, I don't think he'd go that high, but like you got the Mariners, the Brewers, the Rays, the Dodgers at 23, the Twins at 21, so many great development teams, and one of them is probably going to take him. And I think that it will be really great for his development. Great range for him, and really like the Brewers pick here. And I then
putting him in the Midwest too would be also pretty awesome. And that's really something the Brewers have done before in the past.
Okay. That's interesting. I love that. Like Caitlin Clark, keep him in the Midwest. Don't let him leave. We need everything we can get in the Midwest, actually, and I appreciate that staying that way. So moving on then to the 18th overall pick, the Tampa Bay Rays. Might the pitching development team take a pitcher? Might the crazy platooning of their hitters yet again disadvantage another hitting prospect? Which would it be? Potentially for the Rays, Rick, what do you think that they might do at the 18th overall pick in the first round of this draft?
When I was looking at what was available, there were so many options that I wanted to go with, because I was like, oh, there's a ton of like third base, you know, power hitting prospects here that would be really awesome for Tampa Bay in this range. But I'm like, they literally just went third base last year in their draft out of TCU. So I'm just like, okay, what else would they do? And I looked at their lineup. I'm looking all around here, and it just makes sense that they would go high school arm here. They're a fantastic pitching development team. And going with an upside arm like Ryan Sloan here, right-handed pitcher out of high school. And this is a guy that is a Wake Forest commit. He has a solid three-pitch mix with a 95-mile-per-hour fastball, 83-mile-per-hour slider with two-plane break and horizontal action to it, and finally an 86-mile-an-hour changeup that has a solid fade and sink. All three offerings are above average to plus offerings already, so Tampa Bay could have some fun with this profile starter long-term. Sloan does stand at 6'5" and 220 pounds and throws from the right side, like I said before. So this is a starter's build long term. I don't think that there's much risk for reliever in here. But if the Rays are able to get more with the spin rates of his secondary pitch with the slider, you know, and get good ride with that fastball, I think that they could have a lot of fun with him long term here. So Ryan Sloan, to me, is a very solid pickup here at 18 overall.
Yeah, absolutely. Love the idea of a high school pitcher going to the Rays so they could just give them. Usually they go and vulture guys that have already been a little bit developed from everybody else. But maybe that's what they do. You know, maybe that's what they lean on. But the idea of them taking a young high school arm and just molding them and shaping them throughout the minors is really fascinating. So sounds great. Sounds like he's got a really great arsenal and that there's definitely room for development there. And then we got two picks left in the top 20 here. 19th overall is your New York Mets, Rick. Where do you, a Mets fan, see your team, the New York Mets, going at the 19th overall pick of the draft?
I'm going to own the fact that I literally just did what I want the Mets to do and not what I think is logical for the Mets to do. Okay, so I'm going to preface that. So Mets fans that are out there, I'm sorry. But I'm going to do this because I have a platform to do that, I guess.
Dang right, Rick.
New York Mets, if you're listening, take this into consideration, please. I think that you should select Christian Moore, second baseman out of Tennessee. All right? I'm going to tell you, take him right there at 19. I honestly wanted Brody Brett to fall to 19th. My mock draft made me so upset that I had to pivot and do something different that I had complete control of. Jake's laughing at me. This could be very wishful thinking, but I would love to see the Mets be forced to not pass up on the upside of Christian Moore. First off, he is a Brooklyn native, Jake, from Brooklyn. Bring him home. Come on home and do
it. Yeah, and love the sound of that.
I know. What he did at Tennessee over the last three seasons would be a welcome addition to the Mets' long-term plans. This season, Moore played 63 games for the Volunteers, slashing .378, .449, .780, with 29 home runs, 70 runs scored, 67 RBIs, 3 stolen bases. The power is absolutely massive, coming from a 6'1". 210-pound frame. The defense is not quite where you're drafting him for here. realistically speaking, I think he sticks at second long term, though he did play some games at Tennessee in the outfield, particularly in center field and at shortstop. So a little bit of flexibility there. With Luis Angel Acuña knocking on the door to secure the second base position, this might not be a logical choice long term. Like I said before, my second choice would be Ben Hess from Alabama, which seems a little bit more likely because this is something that, you know, the Mets could work on. We'll talk about Ben Hess later on. But I would love the opportunity to be able to see Christian Moore play second base for the Mets long term with that pop and move Luis Angel Acuña around, whether it's at short, whether it's in the outfield. Let him be a Jeff McNeil role, because I just like the upside of Moore so much better. I do, Jake. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, and that, more power to you. I think that he's got a really, really interesting profile and a ton of upside, especially like for a college hitter. You usually know a little bit, like you're like, oh, this is who the guy is. Like Moore has some steps that he could take even forward. So I think that's a really good call out there. All right. Love that. And going on now to the final pick of the second portion of our mock draft here, the 20th overall pick goes to the Toronto Blue Jays. What do we got here? Where are we going to round off the episode with, Rick?
All right, man. I think we got to go for it. I wasn't sure if it was going to be this early or not, but it just seems to fit. And when it fits, Jake, you don't question it.
Yeah.
Tommy Tanks is heading to Toronto. Tommy Tanks, baby. Woo! 6'1", 228-pound slugger. Got the name Tommy Tanks while at NC State. Still bitter about that back in 2022 when he hit 27 home runs in 55 games. Once he transferred to LSU, he continued to impress, driving in 105 RBIs on LSU's 2023 College World Series Championship team, though he did not hit above 27 home runs. Just saying. Shout out to the Wolfpack. Let's go. This season, though, he played 65 games. He slashed .332, .405, .646 with 24 home runs. Still not that much. 60 runs scored, 70 RBIs, and 2 stolen bases. Toronto lacks long-term options at third base. Orelvis Martinez will likely stick at second base, in my opinion. There's a good chance he could play some third, but I think second base is probably his long-term home. So Tommy White would be an excellent selection here at 20th overall. Very has similar characteristics to how Brock Wilkin was around this time, though I think Wilkin is a better hitter with power, a power hitter. Let me put it that way. They both are very, very solid with their bat in terms of average. So Tommy White here, 20th overall to the Blue Jays. I think that's a solid call long term.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I know that, like, realistically, Tommy Tanks has, like, you know, maybe not the perfect swing, perfect approach. He's not exactly the polished, like, incredibly athletic, you know, top draft pick. But, I mean, the dude's got the swagger, the vibes, the presence on the field. Yeah. You know, you can't help but root for Tommy Tanks, of course. And, I mean, it's honestly going to be exciting to see him drafted at all, because I mean, just how long it's been since he first like blew up at NC State. Mm-hmm. And, you know, after transferring to LSU and winning a national championship with, you know, Skeens and Cruz, and then being the one that kind of stayed behind and kept LSU kind of in it and played really well. I mean, it'll be really cool to see him get his moment to be drafted, probably, hopefully in the first round. Cause I mean, he's just, yeah, special college player, and hope that it works out. You know, it hasn't quite been the case for kind of those power first guys, maybe like, you know, Melendez and a few others, but you know, it's a really fascinating profile that could be really well-rounded if he kind of continues to develop a little bit, you know, getting some professional hitting, you know, coaches and whatnot in there. I think really just really a fun, maybe the most fun pick of this portion of the draft.
How,
for sure.
How much fun would it be to watch him with Vladdy?
Oh my gosh! Yeah, I mean,
Vladdy, Bo Bichette. Yeah. Oh,
there'd be so much. If they're still there,
it's true. But there'd be so much swag, so much swag in Toronto.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, That does it. That wraps up the second portion of our MLB mock draft picks 11 through 20. And if you tune back in with us next week, we will have picks 21 through 30 as we continue to move through the first round of the MLB draft. And then we'll, of course, have coverage leading up to the draft and break down everything that happens after the draft. So obviously stay up to date with everything that's happening here on the podcast, and we'll keep you all updated and continue to evaluate what's happening at the major league draft at the amateur level. So thank you, Rick, again, for really leading the charge in breaking down all these picks. It is awesome to hear you talk about them. You've done a ton of work to really know these guys very well. So thank you very much for your time here. And thank you all for listening, for tuning in today. You can catch our next episode. It'll be next Friday on June 14th. You can find myself on Twitter at Jake Mache, Rick at Must Be the Hawk, and the podcast, of course, at PL on the Farm. And please, everybody, have yourselves a great baseball week.